Summer's hotter weather is finally here, but don't let hair loss also make you sweat. Regrow hair with help from Hims. They provide access to personalized treatment so you can see thicker, fuller hair in just 3 to 6 months. Get started from the comfort of home. Fill out an intake form and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Life is a workout. And Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Boston Red Sox dropped the series opener against the Chicago Cubs, losing by a score of 4-1 to fall to 53 wins and 46 losses. I'm Nick the Voice, joined tonight by Jeremy Schilling, and we are the Bastards of Boston. Remember, if you want more, you can go to bastardsofbostonbaseball.com for great written articles. Jeremy, let's start with the big piece of tonight's loss, unfortunately, is Lucas Giolito, and specifically Lucas Giolito's first inning. He really got knocked around a bit by the Cubs, although I thought he settled in pretty nicely. What did you take away from his performance tonight?
I was so frustrated by the fourth batter that I was like seeing red. It seemed like he wasn't ready to start the game, you know, and everyone made the team. I watched the game on Nesson. Everyone made the team workout yesterday. So that was good news. I'm like, these guys are ready to win. And in my opinion, it came down to Giolito just was not competitive in the first three batters. Walk, three-run home run, and we just couldn't overcome it. He did keep us in the game. The offense never got going, but his command wasn't great there. They fought. Credit to the leadoff and two-hitter there. But, you know, he's 15 pitches into his outing, first and second, and it was my nightmare. It was the worst case scenario. We 10 game winning streak, all-star break comes at the wrong time. And he comes out and is non-competitive in the first three batters.
Yeah, I completely agree. It was a shame too, because like you said, it was walk, home run. And it was so predictable, really. He looked very shaky, could not find control of his pitches very well. And it's a shame because after that inning, those were actually the only two walks he issued all game. So it was just like right up front, like you said, a little bit of rust maybe. And yeah, just the idea of the All-Star break kind of ruining any momentum, you know, that we had, whether or not you believe in momentum. But it's tough, you know?
The one thing I always wonder with pitchers, because their routine is so important to getting prepared for their start. And I don't know if these guys went to the beach, went to hang out with their families, you know, went on a short vacation, but did he do his running after his last start? Did he throw a short bullpen on Wednesday? You know, was he doing his day before stuff yesterday? I assume that part. Yes. I just don't know what he did during the break. I haven't heard of any reporter ask him, you know, did you go through your routine even though you weren't at the ballpark? Or maybe he was, you know, I don't know, but he just didn't seem ready to start today's game.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not too concerned really. It's the first game of a 9-game stretch, which is going to be very important for us. Obviously, we're going up against the Cubs, the Phillies, the Dodgers, just absolute National League juggernauts. And honestly, if we go 5-4, I'm going to be pretty happy at the end of the day. I'm not too concerned about Giolito just yet because he did settle in, you know, nicely, I felt, after that first inning meltdown. Unfortunately, he was tacked with an extra run later in the game. Weissert was brought in for relief, which I thought was an interesting choice, certainly. We seem to just keep rolling Weissert out game after game. And this month, obviously, he hasn't been used as much as past months where it was every other day for a while. But just a shame that, you know, we seem to keep going to Weissert in these moments, and he just doesn't look as sharp as he did to start the year.
Yeah, we actually talked about this last night, Nick. We did a kind of a mixed bag recording, and one of the topics was, who do you have in the 7th, 8th, and 9th? And I picked Weissert for the 7th for the mere fact that if you watch the games, that's Cora wants him in that spot. It was the 6th today because that's when it needed that, you know, that guy. And my biggest issue with Weissert is the amount of non-competitive pitches. The pitch that the slider that's like in the batter's box, or the fastball that's like spins the catcher out of his crouch because he's got to lunge for it. It doesn't give the hitter anything to think about. You know, when you're setting guys up, if you want something soft away, the 1-1 pitch is up and in hard. And if you get a swing, now you've kind of set them up for a changeup low and away, or depending on your arsenal, a slurve slider type situation, maybe even not a strike if it's 1-2. And I just saw Terry's comment. Yeah. anyways, it just, to me, he doesn't really have a plan besides throw the ball. And you know, again, I went into this a little bit last night, so I won't totally redo my take today, but I agree with you. Another part of my position here is, this is why the deadline is so important, because I don't think Weissert's going to be off the team, but it pushes him out of that spot and into a role where the starter only goes 4 or 5 innings, and you can hopefully give him a clean inning. But and I know that's not what this podcast is about, but it's so important that they add at least 1 to 2 arms out in that bullpen to push some guys down out of key spots.
I agree. You know, the loss of Justin Slayton was a big one, I think. And, you know, the thing with Weissert really seems to be, and I've heard a lot of people say this, actually, you kind of get the vibe of what his outing is going to look like by his first pitch. You know, you can tell if he's having an on night or an off night. And tonight, sure enough, he was having an off night. He gave up a walk, a hit, got one out, and ultimately couldn't really escape the inning. We let him face the 3-batter minimum, went to Bernardino. Bernardino ended up pitching 1.1, looked pretty solid. If I recall correctly, he made a pretty nice defensive play, which was fun. And then Alcala closed the game out. But really, I mean, going down 4-1, it kind of felt not insurmountable in the beginning, because I thought that we were hitting their starter, Colin Rea, I think his name is. We were hitting him pretty well. You know, he gave up 4 hits, 4 walks, but we just couldn't really get anything done. And as soon as, like, that one guy, Thielbar, I think his name was, he came out of the pen and kind of shut us down. You know, we had 2 ugly at-bats versus him. And at that point, I was like, ooh, I'm starting to feel like this game is kind of out of reach. It felt like a comeback wasn't necessarily in the cards.
Yeah, I mean, for me, we struck out 4 times in the first 5 at-bats to start the game. And I'm sitting here going, wind's blowing in. If you watch the broadcast pregame, I picked it up 5 minutes before first pitch. They were showing the bazillion flags in center field at Wrigley all blowing directly in. I'm like, oh, that's not good. You know, the Cubs are going to hit the ball on the ground and cause problems, although they did hit a ball, a home run. And then they strike out 4 of the first 5 at-bats, and I'm like, this is not a good recipe here. You know, this is the first half Red Sox before the run in July, and it just didn't look right. And then I got confirmation when we're threatening there. I think it was the 5th, and Toro, I don't understand the Little League base running. I never will. I don't mind ball to right field, attempting a first to third, like that sort of thing, like that sort of aggression, especially if it's from Duran, Rafaela, Abreu, the guys that can run. I can accept that because that's part of our identity and who we are. I can't accept a mistake on the bases from Toro for a couple of reasons. One, that specific play. The ball was crushed, but it was right at the center fielder.
Yeah, PCA.
Right? It was right at him. So once he froze the first time, he has to see. He's standing there just waiting for the line drive, and then he restarts, which is what doomed him. So that's number one, the play, okay? But what bothers me about his day, Toro's day today, is that he's not an elite athlete. He's not a power guy. He's kind of a 4A player, and I root for those guys, and I root for Toro. But if you're that type of guy, you have to do the little things right. Knowing to freeze and get back on that play, it's a little thing. And if he did it right, no one would have been like, oh, that was a good job by Toro. But that's exactly what you're supposed to be doing when you're a journeyman. Don't be the reason why we're talking about dumb stuff like this after the game. You know, he had a good pick. He got out of his 0 for 17 with a crisp base hit to right field, which I found odd that he celebrated. You know, he was kind of, yeah. I don't know if you saw it on TV, but he's kind of fist bumping a little bit. You could tell it was a weight off his chest, which I felt great for him in the moment. He's a little aggressive with the high five. He motions to the dugout. He does the camera reel. And then within 90 seconds, he's just making a boneheaded play on the bases. It was extremely frustrated. It killed that rally, you know, and just speaking to the offense, it was Story hit a ball to right field. That was a double, potentially a triple, depending on how it caroms in that corner. And, you know, the analytics tell the right fielder to be, you know, over that way for Story, who's really a pull hitter. And the guy made a great play, and he actually made it look pretty easy, and it was not an easy play. It's just that those sorts of things started compounding throughout the game, you know?
Definitely. You know, a little bit of bad luck here and there goes a long way, especially when you are outmatched. You know, the Red Sox, we put together a great 10-game win streak, but this is the Cubs. This is a phenomenal, phenomenal team. Amazing outfield, amazing infield, just top to bottom talent. And if you want to beat them, you just got to play better baseball. You can't bail them out. And like you said, Toro, I think, like you said, it was a single, and then I think Duran walked. So we had two men on. Alex Bregman's up. And nice, well-struck ball. To get doubled up on that is so beyond inexcusable. And it seems like that's been a problem that the Red Sox have been having for years now, well over half a decade, where we're playing stupid baseball, dumb base running mistakes, just silly little things here and there. You know, I got upset a little bit at the catcher's interference call on Narvaez. That sucked to see. It sort of felt like, you know, when it rains, it pours. But Narvaez, he frames very heavily and very well. A big cost of that typically is you're sitting up front, so you're going to lead to a catcher's interference. That's the type of thing where I'm like, look, Narvaez, you got a little overzealous on that one, whatever, you know? Sedan Rafaela had that great line drive that the ball boy picked up, which was very funny, right down the left field line, went over the third base bag, and that was very strange because the ump right there signaled that it was a fair ball. And the ball boy picked it up, and Sedan was standing on second. And then all the umps got around and sort of talked the guy at third base out of it and said that it was actually a foul ball, which was very strange. I've never quite seen an ump get overruled like that by his own crew. That was very odd. But, you know, Sedan, it did get a base hit after that. But it was just a lot of little things today. And some of it was unlucky, you could say. Some of it was you make your own luck. And that's exactly what Toro was for me. This is a guy who ultimately is a slap hitter. You know, he doesn't like to walk. To his credit, he doesn't strike out. That's a big thing that Toro does. I'll give him kudos on that. But he chases pitches off the plate all the time. And there's no real power to it. You know, he's not hitting the ball hard. He's not barreling the ball. I'm looking at his average exit velocity right now. It's towards the bottom of the league. And on top of that, he's been a league bottom defensive player at first base. And he's been about average on the base paths in terms of speed. But in terms of decision-making, it actually has him at a minus two in the value. So it's just very frustrating to watch. And like you said, I root for guys like this. But at a certain point, I feel like if we want to win, especially if we want to start using Romy as a platoon for Meyer rather than for a first baseman, you kind of got to go out and get a guy like Eugenio Suarez or Yandy Diaz and have an everyday first baseman.
Yeah. I mean, just quickly on some of the topics, I don't find catcher's interference excusable. I understand the desire to get as close as possible, but this is the big leagues, and I think that's one of the things that just can't happen. You know, before I get to that, to your take, because I agree with it, I'm a little bit frustrated by Cora's inability to address the mistakes in real time. And we don't know what's said in the clubhouse after the game. And I know Cora's MO is like deadpan, like we're in the moment. I'm not going to celebrate the 3-run home run. I'm also not going to look at my feet when we give one up. But there's no accountability in the dugout from what we get to see and what's reported. So my understanding of Toro coming off the field is Cora goes up to him, gives him the old tap, like, you know, let's get the next one. You know, and then Narvaez with the catcher's interference. I don't know, man. I would like to see, and I'm a Cora guy, so I'm kind of backtracking here a little bit, but look, can we have some accountability? You know, and maybe Toro, to his credit, came off and said, hey, I effed that one up. Won't happen again. And then you don't need to even say anything. Like, I get it. But like, I'm just some of it. It's because to me, it's a top down thing. Cora was a journeyman player. He did the little things. That's why he stayed in the big leagues for as long as he did. Yet the team he's managing that's taking on his personality as the leader is the exact opposite. The disconnect is frustrates me in games like this. Now, as to your take, I have four things we need to do. I've already talked about one. We need to get a late innings bullpen arm to push guys like Weissert out of those key spots. We absolutely need to figure out what we're going to do with Wong if he doesn't come out of the break and start hitting. If he doesn't start hitting in the next 2 weeks, we got to get a backup catcher that gives you a chance to win the game. We need a top of the rotation starter. And number four is we need an everyday first baseman. And those were in probably reverse order. So Toro was a product of the system, the Red Sox system, not having a backup plan for Cassis at first base. And it has absolutely, we got away with it for a while, but it's absolutely starting to bite us in the ass. It's not Toro's fault. You know, he learned first base like that because he had to, because who's going to say no to a chance to go to the big leagues? All I have to do is go play a position I've never played. So, you know, so we can look at the organizational, you know, chart here. Brezel, why is there no plan for the oft-injured Cassis? Then when he gets injured, it's like we were shocked that he got hurt. So it's a product of a bunch of different reasons. And again, like you said and agreed, I root for the player. Who the player is, I haven't gone through, you know, and done like who's a good first baseman on a bad team, where's his contract at, where's the value, what's it going to take to get him? You know, does he have player control where if we want to pay a little bit more, we can get a guy that's actually going to fix the issue for the next few years? Or are we sitting around waiting for Cassis to come back thinking he's going to be a 30-100 guy? I personally would go get a controllable player and spend some assets to figure out that position, at least in the next, for the next 2 to 3 years. And I don't know where you are on that. Maybe a rental's okay with you if you think this team has a chance to go the whole way, but I'd like to see a longer term solution there.
Yeah, I think that's a very valid take. You know, as soon as Casas went down this year, unfortunately, I did get the feeling like, oh, that's it. That's his time in a Red Sox uniform up, pretty much. But then the Devers trade kind of threw a curveball, because my idea was, well, you take Devers, who was a third baseman, you move him over to first base. It's been done before. It's done all the time. And then, obviously, everything that happened. And suddenly, I don't know where the organization is on or is at with Casas. It's really, really weird, because when he's played in past years, obviously this year he was terrible even before the injury, absolutely abysmal defensively, offensively. In the past years, you know, you look at his OPS, he's been able to put up good numbers in larger sample sizes. I imagine the team wants to take a swing at that, because the problem is we sort of heard rumors about Casas being chopped last year, right? And no one wanted him. And honestly, I don't know how much I want him, I hate to say, just because he's kind of becoming predictable with this injury bug. You know, once a guy gets bit by that, it pops up quite often. So it's tough. It's really tough to say. I think what's going to give Kaz his job security, unfortunately, is just the idea that the front office probably isn't going to want to cut ties with him for no return. You know, so it's going to be sort of a sunk cost fallacy. They're going to hope that next year he pops back up. I have been seeing some names like Ryan O'Hearn and Josh Naylor, who are both rentals, but also options to maybe extend, throw a 3-year contract to. The problem I have with both of those guys is they're a little splits heavy, which I've mentioned in the past, you know? So you would maybe want a Romy platoon for them as well. If that's just to take Toro's spot this year, fair enough. But if we're rocking with as many outfielders as we are, I guess we're going to want to bring Sedan Rafael out of center field into second base more. I don't know how I feel about it.
Well, as the cat. Well, it is. It's a byproduct of neglecting spots within the organization. First, having no first base depth makes no sense. You don't have anybody that can come up and again, Cassis gets hurt. That's what he does. Why were you not planning for this? It's so frustrating. So what I would do with Cassis is get him healthy, put him in Worcester, and have him build his value. It's never going to be higher than the second half of 2023. It's never going to be higher, right? Unless he comes all the way back and he puts together a 3,100 season or something close to it. So what you do is you bring him back. If you go at the deadline and get a multi-year fix at first base, you bring him back to Worcester, you build his value, let him hit. And you don't know what the future is going to, if he goes down there and he's raking, you bring him up and he rakes in Boston, then he can go back to being the first baseman. There's always a solution if it means make the big league roster better. So, I mean, if your plan is just bring him back and give him first base, you're our first baseman, then you're an idiot. You're an idiot. You keep doing the same thing and expect a different result, you know? So, that's where I'm at. I did not expect to go on a Cassis tirade here, but that's where we are after we get, you know, lose 4-1 after like 6-7 mistakes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, first base has been a problem for us defensively all year long. Offensively, Abe Toro was a nice bandage, but, you know, this is exactly like you say, this is a symptom of something that should have been avoided. It was just bad roster construction through and through. We did that silly thing where I don't even remember the guy's name, but we traded cash for that first baseman from the White Sox, I think. And then he got claimed off a waiver, so he's not even in the organization anymore. It's been sloppy.
Dude, we're missing the lead here. I've missed the lead. We've missed the lead, Nick. Their answer, okay, is they took the failed second baseman that they had on the big league roster to start opening day, just because he accepted the extension, wasn't ready, clearly. We send them back down because he's not ready, which has got to be tough for the athlete's psyche. But no, that's not enough. We're the Boston Red Sox. Let's go throw him at first base in Worcester and see what happens. That's our backup plan currently. Just so we're
right. I can't even believe I forgot about that.
Everyone at I went and saw him play when I was in the area a couple weeks ago. Didn't hit at the game I was at. He didn't make any mistakes at first base. But our plan is to take this. And by the way, we failed as an organization. We've failed this player. You know, they set him up to fail. They promoted him. This is the first of the big three. And why was he up? He was only up because he was the only one that was willing to sign the extension. You know, and now they're just messing around and playing first base and this and that. And even if you did have a need, if let's say Toro, and I don't root for this ever, but let's say something happened to Toro and Toro got nicked up, or hey, maybe he goes on bereavement because his wife's having a kid, something positive, right? Is the answer going to be to bring up Campbell? Because it feels like he's kind of regressed and he's not ready. So it just, they have no plan at first base. Let's just slap the sticker or a Band-Aid on it and see if it works. It's pathetic that we're the Boston Red Sox. I'm not the Red Sox. They're the Boston Red Sox. And they are seemingly just completely negligent with one position.
Yeah. And I mean, we sort of saw that at third base too. You know, you had the beautiful debacle, of course, with Bregman taking over at third base, which I love. You know, he's been great there. But during his injury, I mean, you couldn't go and ask Devers to go back over there. So we were kind of exposed at the corners. We had no depth. We finally sort of got rid of the David Hamilton albatross that was hanging around our neck as far as the roster goes. But I'm satisfied with a good group of our starters, but the holes that are there are kind of glaring, you know, and they're bad. These are things that you can't really survive, I don't think. A backup catcher, I do think, is actually going to be very important for us, along with if we could get a starter, I would feel really good. Because I'm not putting anything bad on Giolito for tonight. It is what it is. Bayo's going to go out tomorrow. We'll see what he can do. But, I mean, do you have faith in Buehler in this second half? I don't.
No, I don't. And one of the things that we talked about on a couple of my most recent recordings is the idea of who's the two and the three. That's, you know, because the two and the three start in the playoffs. That's your, it's going to be Crochet, and that's going to be whoever's your two and your three, and you know, those are big spots. I mean, again, winning, losing a series. I mean, you can't throw Crochet out there, you know, enough to just win his starts. You got to win another start somewhere. So I pick Bayo and Giolito. Bayo 2, Giolito 3. I just think Bayo's upside is better. His stuff's better. He's got more ways to get people out, in my opinion. You know, and Giolito was okay today from just a general numbers perspective. It's just the non-competitive first innings from this staff just blow my mind. I don't trust him in a playoff game. And I'm not saying I trust Bayo, which is why we need to go get a number two and push one of those guys to the bullpen in the playoffs and make the three a little, just give us some more flexibility. You know, and to that point for the trade deadline, and I've said this on this podcast, I don't know how many times, I will always want the known commodity at the big league level over the promise of the minor league player. I just get blown away with the it's the backup quarterback fever, right? Your starter's struggling a couple games in a row. And it's like, well, the backup, but he's the backup for a reason, especially if he's a guy that's never played. And so I take that analogy and I apply it to the big leagues. You have a known commodity on a different team. Go get him. Go, because these prospects are not anywhere near 100%. Nowhere near 100%. So go package him. All our other youth is up. Like, why do we still need all this youth? Whatever the talent is that is other teams find attractive, can we please put those guys together in a package and go win? Everyone's talking about the ascension of the big three. Well, the two of them are here. You've added Bregman. You've added Crochet. It makes no sense to not go get those guys and use whatever assets we have in the minor leagues to go get them. So go do that, Craig, please.
I agree. You know, you have the Red Sox that entered this rebuild phase for several years, and it was never like a true tear it all to the ground rebuild, because I feel like John Henry, that just would have hurt his pocketbook a little too much. He didn't want to go completely mask off with it. But if you look at the format and you look at the blueprint, you really do have us subscribing to this rebuild model. And now in theory, the rebuild has been successful. You know, obviously we lost Dobbins, but he was a very promising young pitcher. You have Bayo sort of in his, what is it, third or fourth year, you know, and now you have the young core coming up. And now you're supposed to sort of build a Death Star around it. You know, you have to solidify up this roster. You say, look, we have these star level talents and they're cheap. Let's go out there and let's buy some talent and let's make sure that we can contend in this 5-year window that these guys are here and sort of cost control. And it's going to be really interesting to see what we do. This is going to be very make or break for Craig in a lot of ways. I feel you go out, you get a temporary, you know, there's a lot of holes that need filling, right? If you go out and you get temporary guys, then that might help us push for the playoffs this year. But a lot of those holes are going to go right back to needing filled tomorrow. We don't necessarily have a pipeline of elite talent, like you mentioned, that isn't already on the team. You know, you can say, well, Justinson Garcia, the password, he looks very good, but I mean, he's probably just going to step into Rob Refsnyder's role in a lot of ways. You know, he's not going to be like an everyday center fielder. We already have one of those. We already have right field, left field. You know, we have an abundance of outfielders. I would really, really like us to be decisive and go out and get a mix, I think, of pieces that are just rentals and then guys who are going to be here for another three, 4 years. I mean, we heard that Joe Ryan, unfortunately, the Twins, either the price is exorbitant or maybe they're not willing to sell him at all. I would be very interested to just sort of look inside, be a fly on the wall and see what is the asking price, because no one is truly untouchable. But obviously, if they're like, all right, give us Roman Anthony, I'm like, you know, no thanks, you know?
Yeah. Short-term rental in the bullpen's fine, and a backup catcher is absolutely fine. I can accept that. And obviously, it depends on what's available. You know, if the market dictates, you know, then fine. Rental it at first base. I don't think it makes sense to give up a bunch of assets for a top-of-the-rotation guy and not have somebody that's under a contract for the next 2 or 3 years. So that's the only spot I'm really, like, out on, a short-term rental. But I agree with you. We talked about it last night too. Breslow has started to build some trust. That was one of our mixed bag questions last night, was where are you at with Breslow? And I'm starting to not hate him, at least. You know, he's done some things. He went out and he used Teal and others to get Crochet. You got to give him credit. And I know Bregman was more of a John Henry, maybe Theo thing, but he made it happen. And he also, by the way, signed Crochet. And that looks like an awesome deal as of right now. So there's things that are happening that, you know, he's doing things the right way. I have so many doubts that he can operate under the hot stove deadline. You have 8 hours and you get a phone call and you have 8 hours to make a deal, and you have to have complete and utter trust on your scouting department, all those things. If they do what they did last year, if you recall, the Paxton is the starter and this and that, it's going to send me off a cliff.
Yeah. And I've been seeing a lot of people, a lot of outlets throwing the name Charlie Morton around, you know, and it's going to drive me a little crazy if we do get a guy like that, or a guy like, you know, I think Zach Gallen's having a very bad year. There's a lot of names that people are tossing around that I am just not at all interested. Seth Lugo's another one where I've been predicting his fall off. I tweeted not too long ago about his Savant page saying, I don't like the hard hit percentage. You know, I don't like the chase rate, all of this. And sure enough, Lugo just melted down tonight. Not saying I looked into a crystal ball on that, but I'm afraid of how that type of profile, giving up that many hard hit fly balls, would play at Fenway, especially against a good team in the playoffs. You know, so it's a bit of a headache, because obviously you want a Ryan-esque guy, or another name I've tossed around is Bubich, of course. Some people have brought out Mitch Keller. Mitch Keller has, you know, I like Keller a lot. The only sort of red flag I have with him is his K per nine has been steadily decreasing a lot over the past 3 years. But I would love to have a sure thing to pair with Crochet, because ultimately I feel like that's what wins you championships. You look at 2018, we had Chris Sale, and behind him, we had guys like Eovaldi, Price, and Porcello. All three of them were capable, and E-Rod even, all four of them were capable of going out there and really throwing a great game. Even if Porcello and E-Rod weren't quite, you know, their peak selves, I feel like Price and Eovaldi were a very steady anchor on that team. I feel like that's just kind of the recipe for success, is you can't have an ace stand alone. At the end of the day, he's only going to pitch every 5 days.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't agree more. If you are going to get a Charlie Morton type guy, it's for the fifth spot in the rotation. What I'm talking about is a guy you're going to acquire with the expectation that if healthy, he's going to start game two or game three of a playoff series. That's what I'm talking about. And Craig Breslow did it last year, where he just made moves. See, we bought. We're not stupid. We saw it last year. We saw it fail right in our faces. Paxton breaks his leg. And I'm not going to go player by player, but every single thing that happened failed, except for maybe the backup catcher. Jansen wasn't, like, terrible. But, like, these are meaningful impact moves with the clear intention to win. That's what I'm talking about. Like, that's what the fan base needs. And by the way, it doesn't make any sense to bring up the big three, although Campbell's back down, like you said, like we're here. This is it. We spent all these things. We didn't move any of these players except for Teal. And then you don't go all in, or maybe all in is a bad term, but you don't go and have the intention to make the big league club better. So we'll see. We'll see. You have Crochet on Sunday. So tomorrow's game with Bayo is huge. We got the Cubs got the lefty going.
So we're going to show it in Imanaga.
Yep. So we're going to get Romy. We're going to get Ref Schneider. So we'll see. It's a big start for Bayo with the way Giolito pitched today. If Bayo wants to make sure he's pitching in the playoff series, this would be a big against a good team coming off a loss. You know, hopefully some of the mistakes are they got out of their system today and we go back to what we were, you know, right before the All-Star break.
Yeah, for sure. You know, the thing with Shota Imanaga, I was sort of looking at his page. The nice thing about him is he's one of those profiles of pitcher that I feel like we've hit well in the past, especially given that he's a lefty. He's got really good control, but only, 48 strikeouts in 68 innings so far this year. He's not a big swing and miss guy.
So he'll get 10 tomorrow.
Yeah, of course. You know, but also his ground ball percentage is in the third percentile of the league. So depending on where the wind is blowing, I mean, you could see a couple home runs. That would be certainly nice to see after today's performance, some of the bats to wake up. We don't know for sure who will be paired against Garrett Crochet. One name to look out for might be Matthew Boyd. I know he just made the All-Star game, if I recall correctly. He's been having a phenomenal year. He looks very good. Right now, you know, one thing I'll say before I ask you, you know, what you think about the probable matchups. One last thing I'd like to say is that the Red Sox, as opposed to other teams like the Blue Jays or the Yankees, for example, the Red Sox are in an enviable position because our farm system is still, even without the big three, very nice. It's a strong farm. You have a lot of good names that might attract attention. You have Franklin Arias. You have the rise of certain pitchers this year, such as Tolley, early as well, Clark, James Tibbs, who we added in the Devers trade. I do feel like we have the assets to convince a team to give us a high value player, as opposed to where, you know, if you're the Yankees or the Blue Jays, your best prospects might not necessarily be as alluring.
Well, one thing we have that a lot of people don't is Duran and Abreu could, again, yep. I'm not saying trade those guys because, and I've said this on this podcast many times, you're only trading a guy like Jaron Duran if it improves your big league club in 2025. Like, there's no excuse to get prospects for later. If you're going to move them, that'd be the guy to move them for. Pair them with the password. Pair them with some other low-end, high velocity arms and high A or whatever guys I haven't heard of. And then go get them if that's what you want. So that's the only thing is we have, potential all-stars in Abreu and Duran to pair with prospects, which might actually put us back into a space where we can compete with the package going back.
Yeah, definitely. As for these next two games, I'm not feeling super confident about either one. I'm not feeling super pessimistic either way, to be honest with you. I mean, this Cubs team is very, very good, but they're not immortal necessarily. I'm thinking my soft prediction is probably we drop the series, but we win a game. So maybe one win, one more loss out of these next two starts. What are you thinking?
Well, as tomorrow, I mean, one of the things that really propelled the 10-game winning streak was we just destroyed left-handed pitching. Mm-hmm. And I know the guy tomorrow, Imanaga, that's how you pronounce it. Yep. I always struggle with his name. We're just going to throw a bunch of righties out there. And you know, Ref Schneider's like a 900 OPS against lefties. Romy's right around there. Like, we're going to have so I think they're going to hit. I think they're going to get to him. I know his ERA, I looked it up, it's 2.65, which is outstanding at this point in the season. But I do think, though, that if Bayo's on, we have a decent enough chance to win. Johnny's just he's in the comments. He distracted me there. And
you
then I
you, being your 5'8 first base.
Yeah. I can't. And look, I'm of the mind that there's no excuse not to win Crochet Day. I mean, if he is what he's been, except for the couple starts ago, which means he's going to go 6, 7, or 8, and he's going to be 1-2 runs or less, they should win that game. They should find a way to get to 3, 4, 5 runs and win that game. So, will they? I agree with you. Probably not, but you know, there is a path to still winning this series, and we'll see what happens tomorrow at 7 o'clock on Fox.
Definitely. I think that this is going to be a big statement series. I mean, if we go out there and we win both of these games, we take a series off the Cubs. I think that that is pretty much going to prove to the league that our pre-All-Star break, it wasn't just because, oh, we were playing the Rockies. Oh, we were playing the Nationals. And on the Nationals note, just one last thing before we sign off here. Butt Munch Cookie in chat said, do you think Mackenzie Gore is available? I would love a guy like Gore on the team. I feel like the Nats are very, very close to competing. And I think he's probably a guy they want to keep around, right? He's still got 2 more years of arbitration, I think. He's only 26 this year. And I think with like the emergence of a guy like Wood for them, I think they're probably going to want to keep Gore as an anchor. I would be amazed if they moved him. But honestly, and I've said this a lot, nothing would really surprise me anymore. After the Devers trade, I think that that's pretty much my naivete completely removed. Every player is expendable at the end of the day. It's just about what it's going to cost.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. So thank you guys for joining us. This has been a fun discussion. Obviously not the outcome we wanted today, but I'm not too pessimistic just yet. We'll see by my next appearance how that's changed. Thank you guys so much. I've been Nick the Voice, joined by Jeremy Schilling. We have been the Bastards of Boston, and we will see you next time. Take care.